The Book Nook on WISO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Microsun Lamps.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis. We went back into our archive and pulled out an interview that was recorded back in 2002 with Herbert Woodward Martin. Herb is what I would consider to be the foremost interpreter of the poetry of Paul Laurence Dunbar. And Paul Laurence Dunbar has to be the most famous poet who ever came out of Dayton, Ohio. Herb had a long academic career at University of Dayton, and he's written extensively about Dunbar, and he can recite the poetry of Paul Laurence Dunbar better than anybody I know. In fact, Herb, from a very young age, was sometimes mistaken for Paul Laurence Dunbar, believe it or not, since Paul Laurence Dunbar left this earth early in the 20th century. But it continues. In this interview, Herb talks about how when he was a young man, he was mistaken for Paul Laurence Dunbar, and later in life, he encountered someone who was convinced that he was actually Paul Laurence Dunbar. So talk about being associated with someone you've been interpreting for years. It's just really an amazing situation for Professor Martin, and this is really a fun interview. Let's go back now to 2002 for my interview with Herb Martin on the Best of the Book Nook.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'm delighted to welcome back to the program today Professor Herbert Woodward Martin. He is the co-editor of a new book called In His Own Voice, The Dramatic and Other Uncollected Works of Paul Laurence Dunbar. Welcome back, Herb.
Thanks. Thank you for inviting me.
I've been trying to track you down, and it finally happened, and I'm so pleased that you're here.
Yeah,
Herb, I learned a little bit about you from reading this book. Apparently, at quite a young age, there was a connection. People made a connection between you and Paul Laurence Dunbar,
yeah.
And you didn't like it.
No, I didn't. what happened was I think I looked like him, or at least my peers thought that I really looked like him, and it was very uncomfortable. Because they would say, you know, since you look like this man, you must be related to him. Why don't you get him to tell the teacher that we don't have to memorize these poems? Well, of course, I didn't know this man, and I didn't know where he was, and it just made my life miserable. I memorized the poems, did what I was supposed to do, and I avoided these people like the plague. and I suppressed Dunbar, and I just sort of forgot all of that when we moved to Ohio, and I didn't remember Dunbar until I started teaching again, and then I came to Dayton in 1970, and I opened up the text, and there he was, and I thought, why don't we do a centennial? And that centennial brought it all back to me, because I heard Margaret Walker, the poet and novelist, read Dunbar. And she read Dunbar with such exquisite taste that I thought, mercy, I've got to go back and relearn him. But that those early years were really kind of uncomfortable with Dunbar.
So apparently this was fate.
Yeah, I think so. Because I look back at that centennial. And the guy, there was two of us. I was doing the centennial in Ohio, and there was a guy in California. And he uses his name as Jay Martin. But then I discovered when I went to his conference that his real name was Jay Herbert Martin. And I had the strangest feeling that Dunbar said, I'm picking these two guys, and they both had names, and they're going to do my centennial for me, and I've had this kind of feeling that he's always sort of looking over my shoulder, watching to see that I do it right.
My guest is Herb Martin. Herb, who was Paul Laurence Dunbar?
I think he was an interesting individual. He was a writer who was born in Dayton, Ohio, grew up here, finished his education in high school, and then started out attempting to find work as a law clerk, but found that the doors were shut to him because he was black, and took a job in the Callahan Building as an elevator operator. I think after that it occurred to him just to tell people as they got on and off the elevator that he was a poet, that he wrote poems. It occurred to him to take subscriptions for his book. Then he found a sponsor who gave him the $125 to publish Oak and Ivy, and he published it. The book sold out. He did a second book called Majors and Minors, and that's the one that landed on the desk of William Dean Howells. Howells reviews it in Harper's Weekly in 1898, and the rest is history. It was a fantastic review, and it made Dunbar a household name. So that's as much as I in a capsule that I can tell you about who he was.
And he was very prolific because he really did not live a long life.
No. If you consider that he's professional at 18, that gives him something like 14 years to work. And in 14 years, 12 books of poetry, one that was posthumously published, 4 novels, 4 books of short stories, 4 full-length plays, several one-act plays, 2 musicals which played on Broadway at the turn of the century, and then 1 opera with Samuel Coleridge Taylor. The other guy living in London at the same time was Samuel Taylor Coleridge. And I'd like to be clear
this
about...
This is the composer.
The composer, and the other one was the poet, friends with Wordsworth. And a whole host of essays that no one has ever collected all of them yet. Fortunately for me, I found the full-length play that had never been published and 1 short story in the University of Dayton Rare Book Room that was in typescript, but it had never been published either. So that sort of started me on my search of finding stuff.
My guest is Herb Martin, and he's the co-editor of a new collection called In His Own Voice, The Dramatic and Other Uncollected Works of Paul Laurence Dunbar. It's just been published by the Ohio University Press. And Herb is the poet in residence at the University of Dayton. And he's also the Paul Laurence Dunbar Laureate Poet for Dayton, Ohio.
Yes. They appointed me the Poet Laureate, and I thought, why not just call it the Paul Laurence Dunbar Laureate Poet, since he is so well known, and I think that that honors him as well it should. So that's why I picked that title.
Dunbar could write in just about any kind of style, and this collection bears that out.
Mm-hmm.
His stuff in dialect is so amazing, but it was controversial, wasn't it?
Yes, and I think it was controversial because you have to remember 2 things. One is everybody in the country is suspect of dialect or suspect of the vernacular use of language, and we think that in some ways that that's second rate. The irony of all of that is that we look towards Twain with our better side, and we say this is first-rate writing. And we have to remember that he's writing in Southern white dialect, Southern black dialect, Southern standard English, and then he's writing in pretend British English when we encounter the Duke and the King. And we say that this is first-rate writing. We don't say that for Dunbar. Somehow or other, I think the black literati early on in the turn of the 20th century really didn't want to be associated with dialect. It cast a terrible pall over them, and they insisted on the use of standard English, so that was the mode by which they wanted to be judged. I think that we have to do at least one other thing, and that is remember slaves were imported here. The law said you can't teach them how to read and write. They would have discovered the Constitution. So they, or the Bill of Independence, and they would have. But I think that they learned the language through the ear, and they wrote it down as they heard it, which is in some ways what the Beats did in the 50s and what the new black poets did in the 60s and 70s. And we look at them as being interesting poets. We also look at Robert Burns, who did not give up the Scottish dialect, and we think that he's a major British poet. But somehow or other, Dunbar, fell through the cracks because people were uncomfortable with dialect. And I think that that's been a mistake.
Well, throughout his career, he strikes me as someone who was walking a tightrope. He really had an ability to hide his message in a way. He was very clever,
and
he couldn't write in any kind of dialect. He wrote in Irish dialect. He wrote in white Southern dialect.
Yes.
He could do it all.
Yeah, he did it all. He wrote even in German dialect and Irish. He has a number of those poems. And I think all of that just showed his range and his talent and his ability. And I also think that we have to, in some ways, be kind of careful that writers, when they are talking about important things that the government doesn't like, they usually disappear. witness Rushdie. There was a lady in Bangladesh that they had to spirit out and get her to Switzerland because the government didn't like what she was writing. David Walker writes his four appeals in Jeffersonian English, and no sooner does he publish those things than he disappears like Mr. Hoffa, and nobody's seen hide nor hair of him since. So in some ways, it was a dangerous thing to be a writer, and you're right, Dunbar's walking that thin line like a tightrope, and he's balancing himself between all those people and all of his critics as well. But I think the dialect is just absolutely exquisite. He touches a human nerve there, and we see those people and we identify with those people. So I think that's where his real legacy may be. But at the same time, there are exquisite standard English poems like He Had His Dream. It's really quite remarkable that he was able to do all of those things.
You're listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, going back to the year 2002 for an interview I did with Herbert Woodward Martin for his book that he co-edited called In His Own Voice, The Dramatic and Other Uncollected Works by Paul Laurence Dunbar. Dayton has had a difficult few months between the horrible tornadoes that came through here and the horrible events in the Oregon District. And I just thought that it would be nice to honor Dayton and our greatest poet and our greatest interpreter of that poet, Paul Laurence Dunbar, Herbert Woodward Martin, by bringing you this interview. It's one of those interviews that makes me smile when I listen to it. I always love talking to Herb Martin, and we'll bring you more of this interview from 2002 right after this. You're listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and today we are reprising an interview I did with Herbert Woodward Martin back in the year 2002. He was the co-editor of a book that had just come out at the time called In His Own Voice, The Dramatic and Other Uncollected Works by Paul Laurence Dunbar. And I love it when Herb recites Dunbar
And his insights into Dunbar are really amazing. He has studied him for decades. And in this interview, he talked about how he initially resisted Dunbar, but when he finally gave in, he went all the way and has been studying him ever since. And we've had Herb on the program a number of times over the year. And earlier this year, I gave a talk at the Washington Centerville Public Library, my talk about authors I have known over the years. And lo and behold, I looked out in the audience, and there was Herb Martin listening to my talk. And I was honored that Professor Martin came. And let's continue now with the best of the Book Nook and Herbert Woodward Martin.
You're listening to Book Nook on WYSO. My guest is Herb Martin, and he is a co-editor of In His Own Voice, the dramatic and other uncollected works of Paul Laurence Dunbar, just published by Ohio University Press. Is it Ronald Primo?
Yeah, Ronald Primo.
Tell us about Ronald Primo, your collaborator.
Ron and I met, we'd like to say, 100 years ago at a modern literature conference in Toledo, Ohio. And they were talking about contemporary poetry. And I was amazed that the contemporary poets were Eliot, Pound, and maybe Marianne Moore and Frost. But nobody mentioned Charles Olson or Allen Ginsberg or Gary Snyder or any of those people. And finally, I guess something had said, enough is enough, and I stood up and said, you haven't mentioned any of these people, and all of these people are doing interesting things. Why is it that you are talking about the beginning of the modern period? And apparently I made a friend in the audience with Ron, and so he came over and talked to me about it. And we have been fast colleagues ever since. He came along at a difficult time in the production of the book and said he would be willing to do the introductions if I would feed him all the information. And so I just started calling him up evening after evening and faxing materials in the morning. And he produced the whole thing within 3 months. So it's been, but we've been friends for over 25 years. So it was a nice kind of collaboration for me to have him do that. He teaches at Central Michigan University in Michigan, in Mount Pleasant. But we've been colleagues and friends for a long, long time.
So this book was literally a century in the making.
I think so. Dunbar's waited that long. You know, I started complaining after 10 years. And one of my colleagues at UD said, now, wait a minute, you have to remember that Dunbar's been waiting 100 years and you've only waited 10. And so I got some balance.
I had never read anything by Dunbar besides his poetry.
Yes.
So this was a real eye-opener for me because you've got all kinds of other types of work in here.
Yeah.
And I must say I was very impressed by some of the short stories.
Mm-hmm.
This one, is it Conjuring Joe?
Yes, yes.
That's an amazing
story. It is an amazing story, and it's all about slavery, and it's about a man who was really at the peak of his talent, and then he suddenly, somebody comes to his door, and you realize at the end that he's been a runaway slave. And this man gives up his career and his profession to protect him. The twist is he dies, and then the protector, I think, ends up dead at the end. And that's really a curious kind of twist that Dunbar puts in this story, that here is this man who's willing to go to all of the extremes to not let this guy go back into slavery. And they don't go out of the house, and so they don't know that the Civil War is over and that black people are free. They're still hiding out, and they come to their untimely end both of them dead, which is really kind of sad, you know, on the one hand. But
it's almost got an Edgar Allan Poe element to it.
Yeah, that eeriness about it, that frightfulness. And I thought of even of Richard Wright, that when I'm reading Wright, I know something dreadful is on the next page. I'm afraid to even turn the page. Something harrowing is going to happen.
My guess is Herb Martin. Herb, I think one of the great delights in my experience with you is to hear you read Dunbar. Are you prepared to do that today?
I am. If you have something, I can read.
I'm guessing that you have something you'd like to read.
Well, I will read the little piece. It's called The Making Up, and it's one between a little girl and her doll. And I think it's a lovely poem, and I hope somebody out there will do a children's book on it one of these days. The Making Up. Little Miss Margaret sits in a pout. She and her dolly have just fallen out. Dolly is gazing with sore stare, fitted dejectedly back in her chair, angry at Margaret, tearful and grieved, sore at the spanking so lately received. Pursed to the maiden's lips, close as can be, they are not speaking, Miss Dolly and she. 5 minutes passes in silence, and then Margaret's ready for playing again. Dolly unbendingly sits in her place, never a change coming over her face. Up mad goes Margaret, dropping her pout, clasping her playmate. She whispers in doubt, "Let's don't play and cry. It's too much like true. Let's make up, Dolly. I ain't mad, is you?" I think it's kind of a charming piece for between the little girl and her doll. So.
Where did you find that?
It was in Dunbar's typescript in his handwriting in the microfilm at the Ohio Historical Society. And it took me about 3 months to figure out Dunbar's handwriting in that one line where it says, "Up mad goes Margaret." It took me, his handwriting was so fancy, it just took me forever. And one morning I woke up and I thought, "It's up mad goes." And I went and looked at the typescript and it fit and it was right. And so I had solved that problem, but it took me a long time.
It's sort of like being a poetry detective.
Yeah, you have to figure it out. And then one of the things that I had to remember at the end of once the manuscript was all done, was where I had found all of this stuff and in what box and on what reel it was. And I had to document all of that because the publisher wanted to be sure that we had done a very good job. And if we didn't know where it came from, we were to take it out because somebody would think we just padded the book or made it up. And I didn't want that either, so it was a good thing that they edited everything for me.
Now, I see you're looking for something else in here. Is this another poem?
Well, there's a piece that was published in 1917. Dunbar had sent it to Miss Wyant, and apparently she kept the poem until maybe a decade after Dunbar had died, but she published it in a book called For Memory's Gardens in 1917, and it's called A Toast to Dayton. Love of home, sublimest passion that the human heart can know, changeless still, though fate and fashion rise and fall and ebb and flow, to the glory of our nation, to the welfare of our state, let us all with veneration every effort consecrate. And our city, shall we fail her or desert her gracious cause? Nay, with loyalty we hail her and revere her righteous laws. She shall ever claim our duty, for she shines the brightest gem that has ever decked with beauty dear Ohio's diadem.
He was definitely a Daytonian.
Yes.
Paul Laurence Dunbar. Now, he had a connection with the Wright brothers, did he not?
Yes. They both went, all three of them went to high school. Someone corrected me the other week and said that only Dunbar graduated from high school. But after high school, they ran a newspaper. They published a newspaper called The Dayton Tattler. And I think it was based on the Addison and Steele 18th century Tattler in London. And they published that newspaper for several years. And then I think because they, all three of them, wanted to fly Dunbar with words and the Wright brothers with machinery, they went their separate ways. But they parted amicably, and they remained friends for life.
Those Wright brothers, you just can't get away from them. No. My guess is Herb Martin he and Ron Primo have edited a collection called In His Own Voice, The Dramatic and Other Uncollected Works of Paul Laurence Dunbar. I chuckled. I thought I've Been Kissing Yo Picture is one of the funniest poems.
Oh, yes.
I love that poem, and that's the last one in the book.
Yes. It's really quite a marvelous piece, and I think that one I found in a manuscript form as well. And it was kind of nice to look at that. You know, every once in a while you think, here's something that this guy had in his hands, and you are touching it as well. Let me see if I can sight read this one, because I haven't...
You haven't practiced this one?
No.
Okay.
A lady and her lover had a quarrel. The gal got in a huff, and she played her pat almighty independent. But the dark, he raised her bluff. So he packed his little grip and went to Georgia. But the lady laughed and said, "You ain't no use to try no foolin', Mr. Docky, for you is same as if you were dead." But her days commence a getting lonesome, and she couldn't rest at night. So she took some letter paper and a pencil and set herself to write. "I've been kissing your picture, honey. I've been thinking of you. If you'll come back, I'll send you the money. Come back, darling, do. Yes, I know that I's been scandalous, but I'll ever be true. But don't you know it's might have been wusser. Come back, darling, do." The darky down in Georgia got the letter and the most unhappy time, and he had spotted till his pocketbook was empty and he didn't have a dime. His heart had jumped with pleasure at the message, and he laughed in happy glee. "I'm a hot one, I'm a Lulu, I'm a baby, and she's just dead stuck on me. Though she'll never know I was starving, I'll just let her do kind of light." So he begged the regular equipment and set himself to write. "I've been kissing your picture, honey. I've been thinking of you. Yes, I'll come home if you send the money. I'll come back to you. Yes, I know that I've been scandalous, but I'll ever be true. But don't you know it might have been wusser. I'll come back to you."
I love that. It's a timeless poem.
Yes.
And yet some of the vernacular in it, some people might find offense.
Offensive. But I think that there's a way to read the poetry. In fact, somebody asked me the other night if one of the one-act plays could be mounted and put on. Did I think it was politically possible? Would it be politically correct? And I think there's a way in which you can read the dialect. It isn't just these and those and dims and that's. It's something else. And if you get the right tonal quality there, it plays out well. It's not offensive at all. I think a ton of music in Dunbar's lines, and he's asking for you to tune into that music and those words and to hear what he's saying.
Speaking of music, Herb, if memory serves, I seem to recall that you're a bit of an opera buff.
Yeah.
And Dunbar wrote an opera.
Yes, he did. It was called Dream Lovers, and he wrote it with Samuel Coleridge Taylor, the African-British composer. It's a lovely piece. I think the last time I knew it was being produced was in 1989 in Massachusetts. It was staged. And I don't know if it's been staged since then. It's one of those one acts. And so you have to have something that's complementary to that to be able to produce it. So there ought to be another one act out there that would make a full evening.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958. And you're listening to the Best of the Book Nook and my 2002 interview with Herb Martin. And Herb has made several appearances on the program. I believe this was his second interview. He's also been back again a few years ago. And it's always a pleasure to have Herb on the program because he is a scholar, and he's also thoroughly entertaining. And before we get into this final segment, I just want to warn you that he closes the program out with an amazing recitation of Dunbar, where he goes all out. And it's one of those poems that Herb has recited so many times, he knows it by heart. He probably recites this poem in his sleep. We'll bring you that final segment of the Best of the Book Nook right after this. It's the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. And over the past several months, Dayton has encountered a lot of tragedy, a lot of heartbreak, a lot of trouble between the tornadoes and the horrific events in the Oregon District. Dayton has been pulling together and trying to be strong. And I really felt like it was a good time to bring you this archived interview with Herb Martin. I brought this to you originally back in 2002 when Herb came out here to the station to talk about the book he had just co-edited called In His Own Voice, The Dramatic and Uncollected Works by Paul Laurence Dunbar. And what a scholar and what an interpreter of Dunbar. There's no one like Herb Martin. And we're going to bring you this final segment with Herb, in which he closes out with a poem that absolutely will have you applauding. Here's Herbert Woodward Martin on the Best of the Book Nook.
In case you just tuned in, you're listening to the Book Nook. My guest is Herbert Woodward Martin, poet in residence at the University of Dayton, and Paul Laurence Dunbar, poet laureate for Dayton. And it says here that you are the recipient of an Ohio Arts Council's Governor's Award for the Arts. Now, this is obviously printed in expectation of what?
Of the fact that the Ohio Arts Council has decided that I will get the Governor's Award for Individual Artists for 2002. And quite frankly, I think they might have been snoozing when they voted for me. So when I looked at the competition, I was just in awe of all the people who were on that list. And I thought, how in the world did you squeak past all these other people? But I truly am deeply honored that they picked my name and they picked me for this honor.
If they were sawing logs, then you're being self-effacing.
No, I think I really do think that the competition was horrendous, and I was delighted when they called and told me that I had won. But when I hung up the phone and I looked at that list, I thought, how in the world did you get past all these people?
Who was on there that we would know?
Doch Nanyi from the conductor of Cleveland Orchestra.
Oh, wow.
David Citano, James Reese, Miami. And they are exquisite poets, you know. And I just thought, I don't know what it was that made that committee pull me out of the hat. So I am grateful to them for the honor. And it does Dunbar proud too, I think. So
do you have to go to Columbus and be part of a ceremony?
I think next Wednesday in Columbus on the 13th, the president of the Senate and the House Speaker will be there, and possibly the governor. But, you know, it's going to be a huge kind of thing. And thank goodness my wife is going to go with me and keep my head from swelling. So.
Well, it seems like every time I turn around, Herb, I pick up a newspaper and there's some article about you. Your press agent must be working overtime.
I don't know who those people are. I really don't. I think they're elves and, you know, people who sort of make this stuff up in the middle of the night and then they send it off to the newspaper and the newspaper doesn't question it. Though the people in the PR department at UD have been really very gracious and very kind, and they do a bang-up job. They will come and sit and ask a million questions, and then they go back and they write their press release, but they make sure that everything is clear and documented. And
is that Terry Rizvi?
And Jim Pickering. And several other people.
And those other people.
They will kill me because Pam Huber.
Okay.
They really are first rate. There's no other way of putting it. They're first rate.
Let's talk about you and UD. This seems to be a good combination.
Well, I hope so. I hope that they enjoy me. They let me, you know, be whatever it is I'm being at that moment, and I can wander the hall singing. If I feel like jumping up and doing a pirouette outside, I just do that, and they just think, well, he's on the edge today, and they just let me do it, and that's okay, and I try not to do anything that will really embarrass them. So it's been a good, I think, marriage, a good department to have worked for. I've had, I think, maybe five chairmen, and I've gotten along with all of them. And they have encouraged me to do the research. And I've gotten to the point where I can teach the classes that I like to teach, and I have good students. So some of them will, you know, want to poke you in the side and nettle you, I suppose. but that's to be expected. So in that sense, I have really some good students, and a lot of them have gone on from UD to publish their own music and to publish their own poetry. And the one student that I'm extraordinarily proud of, Lynn Roberts, now has 9 books.
Wow.
And I'm not going to catch up with him because I only have 6. He has 9.
My guest is Herbert Woodward Martin, and you've been at UD now for 30 years?
Yes.
That's really great.
Yeah.
When you work that hard and you spend that time and the institution takes care of you, mm-hmm. And the loyalty there, and their nurturing of your path.
Yeah,
I think that's just wonderful.
Yeah, it's really nice because they haven't it hasn't been a publish or die kind of thing. But I have managed to get the poems out, to write the poems, to give readings, to do the Dunbar program. Not only in this country, but in England and in Hungary as well. So I think that I keep sort of carrying the name around. In fact, I have to tell you, I was in Florida over the weekend, and a lady came up, and she told me that she was writing ballads very much like Kipling. And I said, that's fine, but you have to be careful not to allow Kipling to take you over. Well, she said, you write ballads. And I said, yes. And she said, and I love the one that you wrote about when they listed colored soldiers. And suddenly the light bulb came on in my head. She really thought that I was Dunbar. and there I was, and she was communicating with me. She had been to the website, and she knew it. And I said, oh, you're talking about Paul Lawrence Dunbar, aren't you he? She said, no, ma'am, he died in 1906. And that was, again, this awful connection from my childhood. It will not go away, you know.
Well, I have a similar story. On Valentine's Day, there was a book out called The Collected Love Letters of Dylan Thomas, and the guy who edited it was my guest. And he had been doing a lot of talk radio. He'd been doing a lot of these AM radio quick interview type mm-hmm. deals. And there was a guy who interviewed him who thought he was interviewing Dylan Thomas.
Oh, my Lord. So, that's wild. Yeah. Yeah, I really, I finally had to say to her, I'm not Dunbar. My name is. And she looked at me as if... I was making this up, but that happens to me every once in a while.
Well, you're very much identified with him, and I would take that as a compliment.
I did, ultimately. I just wanted her to know because I think she was worried that I was trying to put her off because I was saying be careful of the ballad form, and she was thinking, why is he advising me not to do this? He's doing it.
Well, she'd finally tracked Dunbar down.
Yes, she did. And there he was in Florida, it was big as life.
My guest is Herbert Woodward Martin. The book is In His Own Voice, The Dramatic and Other Uncollected Works of Paul Lawrence Dunbar, published by Ohio University Press. You're hearing about it on the Book Nook on WYSO. And I don't want to pass up the opportunity to talk about Henry Louis Gates, Jr., and his involvement with this project.
He was very forthcoming. He had promised to get the book read at Oxford. They declined. A number of other people declined as well, so that's no great shame. But he said he would go ahead and write the foreword for the book, and he had promised to do that. So I really thought, okay, he's going to write the foreword, and he went ahead and committed himself to that. We get almost to the end, and everything's done, but we don't have the foreword. And the editor is calling me and saying, where's the foreword? And I said, Henry Louis Gates is going to write it. And finally, I was in absolute desperation. So I went to Woodlawn and came to the gravesite, and I said, everything's done. You gotta get Henry Louis Gates to write this foreword. And within a week and a half, we had the foreword. And so I said, there's something to praying, and there's something to going out there to Dunbar's grave. He thought it was a funny story that I had to go to Dunbar's grave to get him to finish off this foreword. But I didn't know what else to do. And I'd called, I'd left messages, I'd emailed, the publisher had called and emailed, and we weren't getting that five-page essay. And finally, I just went to Dunbar's grave and said, okay, now, we've done all we can. It's up to you. And we got it in a week and a half. So I can't believe, I can believe that prayer does it.
I love that story.
Yeah,
I've never been to his grave. Is it unusual?
It's unusual in that it has a huge rock. It's not as large as the Irma Bombeck one. She brought hers from California. But it's a nice, huge rock. And it has on it a plaque with the poem, Lay Me Down Beneath the Willers. And there's a willow tree there. And it's maybe, 50 feet away from the Wright brothers' graves. The whole Wright brothers' family is just a few yards away from his. You can see it from the roadside and can drive right up to it. So it's there. It's at the top of the hill in the grave. yard.
So Bishop Wright and their sister, they're all out there?
Yes, they're all out there. And all of the Wrights or brothers are in that same area, in that same plot, in a very pristine row, as Tate would have said.
Well, I'm very observant, and I noticed that you've opened up another book, Herb. Is this a cue? Is this a clue?
I looked again. I've been telling people all last month that the young men who have to give their girlfriend something to remember that there's this poem on page 49 in the collected poetry of Paul Laurence Dunbar, and it's called A Negro Love Song. I think Dunbar's a little bit prophetic in that he anticipates the rhythms of rap music. And so, A Negro Love Song. I seen my lady home last night. Jump back, honey, jump back. I held her hand and I squeezed it tight. Jump back, honey, jump back. I heard a sigh, a little sigh. I seen a light gleam from her eye and a smile. I'll go flitting by. Hey, jump back, honey, jump back. I heard the wind blow through the pines. Jump back, honey, jump back. The mockingbird was a-singing fine. Jump back, honey, jump back. And my heart was beating so when I reached my lady's door that I couldn't bear to go. Jump back, honey, jump back. Now I put my arm around her waist. I'll jump back, honey, jump back. I raised her lips and took a taste. Ooh, jump back, honey, jump back. I love me, honey, love me true. Love me well as I love you. And she answered, of course I do. Jump back, honey, jump back.
Herb Martin reading Paul Laurence Dunbar. I love that poem.
Yeah,
and you obviously love it too. How many times have you read that poem, Herb?
I can't even begin to tell you how many times I've read. But of course, my grandchildren, two granddaughters, who are the oldest granddaughters, like this poem too. So they're always asking me to read Jump Back or Miss Lucy, Jump Back or Miss Lucy. Mm-hmm. So whenever I pick them up from school, that's their reward, that they get to hear me recite these poems.
I love Miss Lucy too. You read that last time you were here.
Yes, yes.
Well, I'm looking at the clock, and Herb, I don't know where the time went, but we're running out of time here, so I really appreciate you coming by.
You are gracious to have invited me, and I'm very happy that I could get here. So thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest has been Herbert Woodward Martin, and he is the co-editor of In His Own Voice, The Dramatic and Other Uncollected Works of Paul Laurence Dunbar, just published by Ohio University Press. And congratulations on your Ohio Arts Council Governor's Award for the Arts that you'll be getting next week.
Thank you very much.
That was the amazing Herbert Woodward Martin, and he was my guest back in 2002. We talked about a book he co-edited called In His Own Voice, The Dramatic and Other Uncollected Works by Paul Laurence Dunbar. And during that interview, you learned that Dunbar was a very gifted interpreter of dialect. He could write poems in all sorts of dialects, including German, apparently. And I had not been aware of that until I did that interview with Herb. And recently, I had a program on here where we talked about the history of brewing in Dayton. And afterwards, I got emails from a number of listeners, and one of them sent me a poem which he attributed to Dunbar, and it was written in German dialect in the voice of a husband who was a great appreciator of lager beer, and he was speaking in a German accent and sort of babbling during the poem, and it was a brilliant poem, and I'd never heard that one before, so I assume that was Paul Laurence Dunbar writing in German dialect. As Herb noted, he was proficient at doing that. And some people are uncomfortable with those dialect poems that were written over a century ago, but they are very impressive works of scholarship. And Herb Martin is an eminent scholar of Paul Laurence Dunbar, and I consider him to be our foremost interpreter of Dunbar. A poet from Dayton, Ohio, probably the best-known poet to ever come out of Dayton. And he knew the Wright brothers, and as Herb noted, he's buried at Woodlawn Cemetery, very close to Orville and Wilbur. For the Best of the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks, as always, for listening.